This is the Day Zero update for July 30th, 2017. I am Filippo DiNolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb. I can't believe it's the end of July.
It is. Right? It really is. Yeah, and you know, this is usually the part of the episode where I fumble around to try to find something relevant to say about what happened during the week, but today I actually don't have to, because we've got a guest. We've talked a lot on the show sometimes about the problems with Steam, and I always felt like we didn't really give that topic the care that it deserved. So I reached out to somebody who's kind of been in the thick of it for a good couple of years, and he agreed to join us. So, yeah, welcome aboard, Sid.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So for the folks that don't know who you are, maybe it would be a good idea to give a little bit of an intro, who you are, how you got started, and, well, what you do on YouTube.
Yeah, well, my YouTube channel, I mainly focus on basically consumer advocacy. I started off mainly doing reviews and first impressions type content, but that's slowly migrated, especially over the past 6 months, more into news orientated content, and especially surrounding the, I guess, what people call the more seedy underbelly of Steam games, dealing with asset flippers and developers of questionable behavior and everything like that, that sort of thing, to be able to better inform consumers and allow them to make more my brain just shut down on me. That happens sometimes. To be able to make a better informed decision about the purchases that they make.
Right. And this is something that just kind of developed naturally for you?
Yeah, it's been a slow evolution of the channel over about 2 years.
Yeah, because I remember the first video that you posted was about Steam's paid mods going away.
Yeah, I actually, just a couple of months ago, I went back and listened to that for reference point, and oh my God. Oh, so bad.
Yeah,
oh.
If you think I sound bad now, you should hear what the show was like 2 years ago. Jeez, we all improve as time goes by. You know, for me, when I came to your channel, it was because of Jim Sterling's signal boost of an issue you were having with, I believe it was Dentola Studios at the time, who were using DMCA to basically censor commentary they didn't like. Is this something that seems to be quite common, at least in the days of Greenlight. I don't know how prevalent it is right now.
It still happens. Mostly you'll see this happen with smaller channels, people that they know really can't defend themselves or do too much in regards to it. Every once in a while, you'll see someone stupid pick a fight with a larger YouTuber like Total Biscuit or Jim Sterling. But, you know, for the most part, they tend to target these smaller channels like they did with mine because they have no legitimate means of recourse. Lawsuits in that regard are very expensive, and more often than not, you're talking about an international lawsuit, which is exceptionally expensive. And usually it's more for a rather pyrrhic victory where you get basically a victory on moral grounds, and it would still come at a great monetary expense. So because of that, these people feel emboldened to be able to do that to these smaller channels and abuse that system to try and, again, silence the criticism so they can make as much money as possible.
Yeah. And you talked about shady developers, and it seems to me like these are generally just really bad people in general.
Yeah, for some reason, Steam seems to just attract the cranks and the crazy.
Well, they do, because Steam, more than any other digital distribution platform, has multiple systems set up for these people to be able to generate revenue from their games not directly related to the game sales themselves. And it's because of that that they've attracted the worst of the worst.
Yeah, the trading card system seems like something that was being abused for a good long time, and I think still is.
It is, yes.
Yeah. Valve has taken some steps to kind of mitigate some of that, but you don't feel like they've gone far enough as far as this goes.
They haven't. The main thing with Steam there, and they've even admitted it themselves, is they're afraid, basically. They're afraid to anger people, and they're afraid to do anything that would end up hurting their income. And, you know, they don't have a direct incentivization to come down hard on these companies that do this, because they do actually end up making money off of it. It's not very much, but as long as they're earning money off of something, they will turn a blind eye until it becomes a potential PR issue where it would cost them more money to allow it to continue than it would to intercede.
So can I ask a question? I was just say, so you guys mentioned developers sort of abusing this and not getting direct revenue just from their games. What are the abuses that they're doing for people that might not know that?
Well, there's a wide variety of ways they go about it. First off, a lot of times you'll see with these Steam trading card farmers, what they do is they have groups of bot users that they set up to automatically harvest and farm these trading cards to convert to gems, to be able to trade for digital goods like CSGO loot crates or keys or things of that nature. And they go through that through a variety of ways. And what these asset flippers will do is they will get a product onto the Steam storefront, and from there, they're basically able to generate as many keys as they want for, quote, review copy. And that's, you know, that system is designed for the developers of the games to be able to distribute the games to, of course, reviewers at no cost to themselves to help get the word out there. These people will generate thousands or tens of thousands of keys to sell for, you know, between one and five rubles a piece if they're selling on the Russian third-party markets for these card farmers to use. And they're able to generate trading cards that are in excess of value of what they paid for the game. And, of course, all of that is being done external to Steam's system, so Valve never sees a cut of that money. But the Steam trading cards and the sales of those CSGO loot crates and the keys and everything like that that's traded on third-party sites like G2A and some others, they do see revenue on those.
Yeah. So that's basically just scratching the surface of some of the stuff that goes on Steam.
And now we get to the fun stuff.
Yeah, because you have had experience with probably some of the worst developers on the platform. Have any war stories that you'd like to share with us?
Oh, so many. There's one. Right now, I'm actually working with YouTube to have a defamation strike removed from one of my videos. This character Andrew Watt, who produced a very he's working on producing a very horrible game called Blood of Old. And he took extreme exception to my video and continued to harangue me both on the Steam comments, on Twitter, and both publicly on Twitter and in DMs. And because he was basically stomping his feet impotently, and he knew that a DMCA strike would not stick, he filed a defamation claim, which basically has meant that video is not viewable in the UK. You can see it anywhere else in the world, just not the UK.
Yeah, UK has very different defamation laws than we do over here.
So why is it that he can get away with that? Just because he disagreed with what you said?
Yeah, because he disagreed with what I said, even though everything that I stated in the video was showed with physical, visual evidence of the claims that I were making. He can do that, but one, because the laws are very different over there. But it's, you know, it's basically his word against, I would say his word against mine, because it was done sight unseen with no defense being able to be given, which is very standard for a company like YouTube who has to rely on safe harbor protection. I see that. That's also one of the most common things you see is, oh, YouTube's system is broken. It's actually not. They are doing what they have to do. to be, because if they deliberately protect me from something that does turn out to be my violating the law in some way, they lose that safe harbor protection, and then any claim of DMCA, any claim of defamation, anything involving any video on their platform, they could be sued over.
Yeah. Which is a little strange, because wow. YouTube has, I believe they stated at one point that they were putting aside $1 million towards helping with legal issues like this. I guess it mm-hmm. really depends on, well, the content creator that they have to choose.
Yeah, they're willing to do that. They were willing to do that with a test group of YouTubers that was never expanded upon. There were, I believe, 7 initials, and Jim Sterling was one of those, where their channels aren't protected from DMCA strikes. They can still get them, but they have to in order for YouTube to maintain that safe harbor protection. But what YouTube is, what Google is willing to do, is willing to foot the bill for a legal fund for that select group of users to combat a DMCA strike if it goes that far.
Yeah. So if you're pretty big, then perhaps YouTube will help you out. If not, you're kind of have to, you know, tread on eggshells.
That was years ago, though, and they've never added in another YouTuber to it. So it's basically those few got golden umbrella protection. Which is, you know, good, especially considering at that time, the reason why Jim Sterling was added to that list was because he was getting, it seemed like, DMCA'd every month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was ridiculous.
So he was just getting DMCA'd because he put something out that was something someone didn't like.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Yeah.
The DMCA system can be used. It is a legal method for copyright owners to be able to protect their works. It's put into place, and it was originally designed back in the late 90s to offer protection against peer-to-peer network sharing sites like Kazaa and Napster and a few others. And those were why those provisions were put into place. And unfortunately, now we've obviously seen over the past several years that the DMCA system, as it was designed in the late 90s, just does not fit the internet of today.
Yeah.
Right. And we currently have a Congress that I don't think actually understands how the internet works. And we have a head of the FCC now that is a Verizon lawyer. So
yeah.
Those laws probably will not be changed anytime soon.
Yeah.
So, you know, apart from the crap that has gone on, you have been highlighting a few genuinely good developers who seem to know how to handle their communities. You want to talk a little bit about those guys?
Yeah, I have a series that I do on my channel called the Diamond Devs series, and that's generally reserved for smaller developers who have shown that they are talented, that they're willing to put out a good product, and that they are just generally good people, and, you know, people that are very communicative with their customer base and responsive, because it's actually become such a rare thing in the industry to see that I feel that it should be celebrated.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we're in the time now where everything is so negative. It's really nice.
Yeah.
You know, to see, like, there are still really good people out there, and some mm-hmm. of them want to make fun games for other people. Yeah, so
the sad part is there are actually a lot of independent developers out there that are just like that. All they want to do is they have a passion for gaming. They want to make something that other people will be able to enjoy. The problem is their voices get drowned out by the sea of asset flippers and, you know, the lowest common denominator of what Steam has to offer, that it's hard for them to get a voice, and it's hard for them to gain visibility, especially when so many new games are coming out on a daily basis, that, you know, I feel for them. I really do. And I would love to help them out in any way I can. And part of that is to showcase these, you know, bad devs doing bad things, and showcase exceptional developers as best as I can to help them gain that visibility that they deserve. And while at the same time trying to push away the sea of negativity.
Yeah.
You're doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah. So Steam has, you know, put some methods in place to try to alleviate that. They've, well, what have they done? Well, they're changing their algorithms for one thing. They put a time delay into place for trading cards and implemented the $100 fee per game. Don't think that really goes far enough, to be honest.
It really doesn't. Basically, this is first step. This should be considered first steps. Unfortunately, though, Valve probably won't carry it much beyond that, which means that it will be ineffectual at best, as the $100 fee per game is actually, I've even heard from a lot of indie developers that the $100 is a joke. And, you know, especially considering it is a recoupable fee.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it would be frustrating for some smaller developers, but if you really want to impact asset flippers and their ability to earn meaningful income on the storefront off of their products, then you would need to institute something closer to $500 or more dollars per game posting.
Yeah,
I would even go as far as maybe $2,500 non-recoupable.
I think that might be setting the bar a little too high.
See, mm-hmm. I like the idea of the recoupable fee, especially because there's so many smaller developers out there that do put out a decent product that might only sell 100 or 200 copies at, yeah, you know, $5 or $10 a piece. And so what, you know, I've always felt that, you know, a slightly higher barrier to entry would be a good thing. Make it recoupable and make it so when someone has earned trust, once they have proven that they're putting out decent products that people enjoy, waive the fee for that developer.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sets up kind of a tiered system, but it's a tiered system that I think is justified, right, in this case.
Or once, you know, you could make it even a three-tiered system. Start off with, you know, this is your first game onto the Steam storefront. We're going to give you a recoupable $1,000 fee. Once you get into, you know, two or three games that have, you know, decent amount of positive reviews and, you know, the analytics all look good, okay, it's a $500 recoupable fee. And then once you've been on the store for a couple of years, you put out a product, you've shown yourself to be, you know, a solid developer, there's no fee.
Yeah, I think
that sounds good.
Yeah, that would go a long way to mitigating a lot of this problem, because most of these people are just in it for a quick buck. They're not going to hang around and try to build a reputation and then get those fees waived.
And of course, there are ways around that too, and these asset flippers are figuring that out very quickly. I'm actually putting together some informational components now to be able to do a video showcasing this, but we've seen some asset flippers who are actually removing the depot files for their games, uploading new depot files, and then renaming and rebranding the games without having to purchase or pay the fee to put a new game onto the Steam storefront.
Oh, that's dirty.
Yeah, God. Didn't Digital Homicide, well, no, I was expecting to say, didn't Digital Homicide do something similar, but all they did was basically take the same game and just switch visuals.
Yeah, they made very minor adjustments to the visuals and then just copy-pasted them ad nauseum to the point where they posted, I think it was 23 new games onto the Steam storefront in a week. Ugh.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, and Valve didn't do a whole heck of a lot until it started to impact them. And then, then Digital Homicide went away.
Well, it basically took Jim Sterling, you know, basically making as big a fuss as he did, and then that whole legal thing he was drawn, just dragged through the coals.
Yeah.
Or,
See, and even then, I feel he was far too kind.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people like my channel and my content because I'm a very level-headed person, but at the same time, I'm a very unforgiving person. And, you know, if I were in his shoes, I would have nailed them up on a cross for all to see. And I wouldn't have stopped until they were completely finished in the industry, never capable of returning.
Never to be seen again, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he did basically...
I like the way you think.
He did basically give sort of a, after the suit was basically, I can't remember if it was dropped or if it was or if they actually ruled in his favor.
It was an agreement. It was a signed agreement by the prosecution and the defense to dismiss the case with prejudice.
Yeah. I think maybe at that point he was just sick of talking about it and was probably ready to just say. No,
it had been going on for a year at that point, and you know, maintaining the pay for an attorney for a year in a case like that is extremely expensive.
Yeah.
So where do you see the business going in 5 years? Where there are some trends developing right now. There's a lot of fee-to-pay mechanics trickling into paid games. There's some very, you know, reprehensible Skinner box type mechanics that are being applied to games that really shouldn't have them. Yeah, Call of Duty, put that out there. But, I'm wondering, like, where do you see this business going in 5 years?
Well, we've already been seeing a slow trend that I think is going to be, from the AAA industry, that I think is going to be building up a lot of steam, no pun intended, towards much more of a software as a service or games as a service model. We already know this is how the AAA industry is going to want to go. That's where they've been trying to take their games for the past several years. And we've seen initial forays into that system, and they haven't been met with a very good reception, but they're learning and they're trying to figure out a way to be able to shove it down customers' throats in a way that the people will just accept and deal with, not like, but deal with. And, you know, we've seen that with Hitman and the episodic release and everything like that is, and the DLC content, season passes, and everything involving that is all aiming towards a long-term, taking a single game and turning it into a long-term evolution product, to where you will see, you know, and we've already seen other games, smaller games like this, with Paradox Interactive, and there some games having 60, 70 DLC packages. They will eventually want to take games to where the games themselves will be a monthly or yearly fee, and to where they will continue to work on those games and produce new content for them as opposed to coming out with new games.
Yeah. I miss the days of expansion packs. Yeah. Because, you know, those were the days when you'd buy a game, you'd have a lot of fun with it for a few months, and then a few months later, you'd have more fun with it because there'd be a new expansion pack out to buy and enjoy. If we could get back to that, and if season passes could, like, die in a fire, I would
It'll never be happen.
Happy.
It'll never happen. The problem is, for some weird reason, it's an interesting dichotomy with the games industry, especially when it comes to its consumers, is that the consumer base for video games, they are very intolerant when they know they're being directly messed with.
Mm-hmm.
And no group of people will turn on someone faster. But at the same time, the attention span and the forgetfulness involved with that is extreme. As we've seen, all of the AAA developers and publishers out there have done the most horrendously anti-consumer things that anyone could ever think of. And the next game that comes out, everyone seems to forget that. For a perfect example would be Deus Ex Augment Your Pre-Order.
Oh, God.
You know, we talked about that.
Yeah. That was, that didn't go over well with anybody, really.
No, it did not.
Yeah.
But as soon as the game came out, everyone wanted it.
Yeah. Well, it was a good game until they just broke it by adding microtransactions into it.
Yeah. And you're going to see that. You're going to see microtransactions shoehorned into basically everything because there's no reason for them not to. There's no incentivization for these companies to not do that. It's very simple for them to do, and they make a ton of money off of it. And considering it's never harmed them You know,
yeah,
they have to get burned before they'll pull back. And so far that hasn't happened. And it won't happen because one thing I know about gamers is they are very attracted to the next shiny thing.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting you said that because we've talked about that quite a bit on the show. And a big part of the problem that we see happening, I think, with games in general, to your point, is that developers will bring out something and then the next shiny thing will come out and everyone loses their mind and forgets pretty much how these developers tried to fuck them. Like, you can sit here and talk about all these companies that have done horrible things to their consumers, but EA still makes bank. You know, all these companies that have no intention of actually providing, I would say, a fair product to their customers, because they know that there are people out there that have no trouble, you know, no problem ponying up the $20 or $30 additional for DLC, for map packs, for coins in games, or something else like that. But what I wanted to ask you is with that, because I watched a lot of your videos before we jumped on the podcast, and I appreciate the fact that you're extremely consumer friendly. If you ever listen to our show, or if you ever go back and listen to any of this stuff, I basically complain about everyone. I hate pretty much every video game company, and right now I actually really, really hate Nintendo. And just for that same kind of thing, that sort of anti-consumer practice that most companies do in various shapes and forms. But what I'm curious about, because I was particularly looking at your the Devoid of Shadows lawsuit, which I thought was kind of comical that person would threaten someone over the translations. But mm-hmm. I wanted to get your opinion on this because I feel like there's some causation here that maybe people aren't talking about. And when I look at the way that developers treat some of their customers, I think it's impossible to look at that problem without also looking at the way that gamers treat these creators, particularly when they feel like there's something egregious that was done to them. Like you had mentioned, you know, gamers don't like being toyed with. But at the same time, I think particularly like in the Steam system, you can see avalanches of one-star reviews and all kinds of things happen to games over a perceived slight.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm curious what you think about that, because part of me feels like the reason that person, that translator, even brought up a lawsuit in the first place was because there's been sort of this arms race in between consumers and developers over the years where it's just escalated, almost like we can't stand you, but we need you to exist. And gamers are like, we can't stand you, but we want the new shiny thing. And I was curious what your thoughts are on that, because I feel like it's very symbiotic. I don't necessarily feel like a lot of developers are going after or even threatening to go after consumers for fun. It's sort of an escalation of this, and I was curious what you thought about that.
A lot of the time, something like that, there is no slow escalation. So I've seen that happen with three indie dev teams so far. And, you know, the previous few instances that I saw that with, it was because the developer was an asset flipper or that the developer was doing something extremely shady, or the developer was deliberately being antagonistic and deleting discussion threads and attempting to silence any critique on their game. And then mm-hmm. they finally lost their minds. And because, you know, if you silence someone, that will frustrate them to no end. You know, I learned that I've learned that time and time again, and I've seen examples of it countless times, to where trying to shut someone up is the worst possible thing you can do, because that will just make them shout louder, and sooner or later other people are going to come over to see what all the fuss is about, and then they're going to see what you did and they're going to be angry by proxy. What happened here with this translator is there was actually no escalation. There was some gentle ribbing there going on with a few people, sure. But the discussion thread that I saw there, some of those people were actually attempting to be helpful, and they were trying to work with the developers. And the developers themselves were asking questions like, well, what was bad about it? Can you point something out here? Let me know where this is going wrong, and we'll try and fix it. Which, you know, that's perfectly reasonable. And if they're hiring a translator for the English translation, they won't know. If they did, they wouldn't need the translator to begin with.
Right.
Yeah.
And then this translator just comes in and then just flops out with this giant mess of accusations and name calling, and then a legal threat, all in a single statement, just out of nowhere. And that underscores the problem with – this is a problem that you see mainly in the independent scene, where you have a bunch of people with giant egos, some of them not always deserved, where they are in a professional capacity even though they themselves are not professionals. And they are acting like a person who got butthurt around the water cooler because a coworker said a bad thing about them. When that's – you are a person selling a product to a consumer, and a consumer has a problem with what you were offering them. And instead of working with them to try and identify the issue and solving it, you turn around and attack them. So naturally that animosity is going to get created there. Whereas, you know, and it's frustrating to see. It really is, because it's one of those simple things where if you just – not act like a dick maybe for 5 seconds, they would be extremely receptive.
But isn't that cuts both ways, though, don't you think? I mean, if you go to any forum, and I'm not trying to be apologetic for any developer doing anything like this. I'm just trying to look at it from a more person-based perspective. Like when you have these people that go to a board like NeoGAF, where you'll have people like, oh, it's not 1080p 60 frames a second. This is fucking garbage. What's wrong with these people? They're lazy. They don't want to do their jobs. How come they can't do this right? Blah 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 blah. Oh my God, there's a girl in this game. Blah, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, that's the thing. I wonder about that. Like, I don't think that this person in this instance, the one that came out and threw it to Trapman, by the way, which was comical. But the idea that they could threaten a consumer because their job was in question was funny enough, but it's hard for me not to see this overall, at least, to gamers being part of this problem for the escalation. Maybe not in this specific instance, but overall.
Well, I admit it. Gamers can be exceptionally toxic. They really can. But at the same time, you, again, as the developer, you are working in a professional capacity. You are selling a product to them. If you want to get antagonistic, if you want to piss and moan, do it to your coworkers. Don't do it to your customers.
I agree. Absolutely. I work for a software company. That's one of the reasons I was also bringing it up. But I also think, too, maybe there's no punishment for these people behaving this way, because to the point you made earlier, gamers love the next big shiny thing. So in a way, a lot of gamers are also enabling this kind of behavior, almost like a battered wife. Like, well, he loves me because he gave me the new Deus Ex, even though he beat my ass or stole my wallet or whatever the case may be. So, like, I was curious what your thoughts were for that, too, because it feels to me, to a certain extent, gamers also have a hand in this sort of behavior, because they keep taking this stuff that I think in any other industry, most people are like, you know what, I'm done.
AKA, very much so. I'm not going to lay all the blame down at the developer's feet. That would just be wrong. More often than not, there are a lot, there are a lot of antagonistic gamers out there that they love stirring the pot and they love causing trouble. It's what they do. I mean, go to the comments section of any YouTube video ever and you'll see what I mean. To a certain extent, to my mind, it seems almost like Stockholm Syndrome. To where, people do fall in love with they have an unhealthy attachment to the game developers and publishers. And because of that, they can become vociferously antagonistic if something doesn't go their way.
Right.
It's, you didn't give me this thing how I wanted it. How dare you? You are the worst person alive. You need to die in a lake of fire. Yeah. And yet they'll turn around and buy the next one.
Yeah.
Right, they'll be first there with $60. Like, well, I didn't mean the lake of fire comment. Just a regular lake.
Yeah. Should probably also bring up the update to that Devoid of Shadows story, because that was a bit unexpected.
Yeah, to be fair, what the publisher was doing, and this is where this is part of the reason why I made sure to point out in my initial video the very stark difference in impressions that the publishers and the translator gave off is what they ended up doing there. Because of that, is they fired the translator. They said that they fired the translator, they've been removed from the game, and they've been having an open and frank discussion with the customers about, okay, so what's wrong with this translation? How can we fix this for you? And, you know, that is the type of collaborative exchange that, especially in the independent scene, that these groups of people, these companies really need to have, you know, yes. Because more so than anything else, the independent scene has to rely on their consumer base, and consumer trust and customer faith is by far and away the most essential aspect of being an indie developer. And seeing them work with their community in that way is a fantastic thing. And, you know, it will create customer loyalty based on that alone. So people will be able to interact with and help create the game that they're playing, even make it even better. And it's that collaborative tie-in that will make even a mediocre game a much bigger success than it otherwise might have been.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on Star Wars Battlefront 2 and not having a season pass, but sort of having one anyway?
Oh, Battlefront. Star Wars Battlefront EA, yes. Oh, dear Lord. Okay. That game, I haven't looked at the whole season pass, no season pass model yet because I've had a subconscious aversion to that product line since the last one. I played it for about 3 hours and I uninstalled it and I haven't touched it since because it was just so bad. It was. There was no single player component to the first game at all. And the multiplayer was vacuously empty and there was no there was no attempt at creating an environment of collaboration in a multiplayer game. You feel like you're playing a single player game along with everyone else. Mm. And, you know, the Star Wars Battlefront EA 2, it looks like, okay, so the multiplayer is going to be more of the same, but they threw in a campaign this time. That's good. They should have done that last time, but all right, finally, you're finally putting out what you should have put out the last time around. So good on you for that, for finally doing your job. It'll probably be a 4-hour campaign. Because that seems like all we ever get with those AAA multiplayer titles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then everything else will be more Battlefield 1. Just with Star Wars skin.
Yeah. Well, to their credit, they did announce that all upcoming maps, characters, vehicles, all that stuff is just free. Because they apparently want to keep the player base on a level playing field. So...
And yet, their microtransaction system has pay-to-win mechanics.
Yeah.
So, yep.
yeah. One hand.
So of course, one hand taketh. Of course, we'll provide you with free maps to keep you playing. And oh, by the way, did you want this gold card that'll give you 3% additional damage to your gun? That'll be $2.99, please.
yeah. So yeah. Yeah. Maybe EA will learn one day, or
they will, because EA, Battlefield in particular has been released broken. I think the last three times it's launched, and to the point that we were talking, to the point that we were talking about a few minutes ago, gamers have done nothing to slap the hand, so to speak, so that EA could actually learn a lesson and go, we can't pull this anymore. And I imagine Battlefield 2, Star Wars Battlefield 2, whatever the hell it's called, is going to sell like gangbusters because it's Star Wars, because you have the movie coming out. And, you know, there's no – part of me thinks the microtransaction sort of situation that we see here as well is because I think they're also – it's been my experience, people that are a lot more casual with games, and I have quite a few that are like that, that they just get a system, they play one or two things. They have no problem funneling their money into something like that. Like, I have a friend who plays Grand Theft Auto Online, and it seems like every month he's buying one of their shark cards so you can buy more stuff in the game. And you know, that's also partly because just grinding it out is really, really difficult. And I see, like, those microtransactions more for people like him rather than people like us. But I get the distinct impression that the amount of money that people like him spend compared to people like us is the biggest reason why they don't stop doing this, because there's no onus on them to stop because they keep being rewarded.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It makes them money, and it makes them enough money to warrant putting it in the game regardless. And it's because of that, you know, it's because of that income that they know they're going to be able to generate from microtransactions is why they're like, okay, well, we can just give the maps for free because we know it will keep people playing longer and it will keep them paying for microtransactions more. It's a small expenditure to, you know, it's basically the free maps or cost of doing business for the income that they know will be generated from the microtransactions.
Yeah. And until people, you know, catch wise to that kind of thing, it's still going to happen.
Oh, I guess it's even been basically willing to die on. It's basically at the point where it's been demonstrably proven that even if people are aware of it happening, they still go along with it.
Hmm. Yeah.
Which is a shame. I mean, I will probably still pick up Battlefront 2. Basically interchangeable. Like I said, it's just Battlefield with a Star Wars skin. But I will still probably pick it up because I know a lot of people are going to want to know what my thoughts are on it, and I know the EA is not going to give me a review code for it. And I probably would pick it up anyways because at the end of the day, even though I strongly suspect it's going to be a crap game, I want it to be good. I really do, because I want a good Star Wars game. So just in the small, minute chance that it might be good, I'll probably pick it up. Because
and the
studio
that's working on it is so easy to root for, especially after E3.
Yeah.
Oh, God, the E3 conference on that. The tweet that was heard around the world. Are you kidding me? My God. You know how many gamers were screaming about the fact that there was no single player before the game even came out? And they're like, we're just going to give this big star all the credit for the fact that we're finally decided that, yeah, we'd probably be in a really bad way if we didn't include a campaign on this one.
Yeah.
Part of me too thinks that's EA with cost cutting. They did the same thing with Titanfall. Like, I don't think the developers. I imagine even when you look at Call of Duty still has a campaign to it. I think the developers realize that there are people that still do that, but campaigns are a fixed cost that really don't have any sort of long tail. Because they don't have microtransactions built into them. So, and then we saw them rectify that. Not only did Respawn do it with Titanfall 2, but you know, we're seeing the same thing with Battlefront. So I think all of these companies just doing games that are multiplayer only and wanting to charge $60 for it are realizing they have to put something into it. And I do think it's sort of like the publishers that are more have been pressing that to not do it because it's a fixed cost that doesn't have a lot of payoff. Mm-hmm. But then you see that kind of backlash, and got to keep the customers happy if you're also going to plug them into the microtransactions.
Yeah, it's very much always, especially with the AAA industry, it's always very much a case of do the absolute minimum that we can get away with charging this amount of money for. And that's why they tried to get away with a multiplayer-only campaign or a multiplayer-only game that, you know, that – basically was just not good at all.
Yeah, it didn't start becoming somewhat good until 2 years after it came out. So
yeah, by then it was already way far too late, and to my mind it still isn't good.
Yeah.
It's really not, because the way they designed the multiplayer system, it makes the player feel isolated from their team. It's not a cooperative game. It makes you feel like you are a single player person playing a multiplayer game along with 30 other single players. That is just so boring to me. I just can't deal with it. You know, I'll go play Overwatch where I can be on comms with a group of my friends blowing shit up and having fun. And, you know, even though there's no campaign in that one either, I'm able to function in a collaborative environment and know and feel like I'm part of a team.
Yeah.
And that is just immensely more satisfying for so many people than a game like that will ever be.
Yeah. So I guess one of the other things I would like to bring up is, do you feel we're heading for another crash? I get the impression from a lot of folks on YouTube that have been pointing out the you know, shortcomings of the gaming industry, where this thing is going, that we're probably due for at least a few of the big publishers imploding at this point.
I think we were headed that way, but I think this past year has been an indication that I think they've learned their lessons about diving off at the deep end as far as the costs of their games are concerned. I think we've started to see them pull back a little bit. That's mainly what would have facilitated a crash, to the point where they could say, well, we spent $80 million on this game and broke even. You know, at that point, it's like, my God, you're spending way too much money. Yeah, it's like we love the insanely cool graphics, and we love the large original orchestral pieces and everything like that that hundreds of people spent thousands of hours working on. But you know, it's very much a sunk cost fallacy with the AAA industry that I think they're starting to wake up to. And because that, we've seen them start pulling back. We've seen them starting to, you know, and a lot of that is also based on the iteration versus innovation. You know, games like Battlefront 2 and the Battlefield series, Call of Duty series, a lot of those are very iterative. They take a lot of core framework from the previous titles, and then they just make minor adjustments. It's a lot cheaper for them, and they can get a lot done a lot faster. And they're starting to learn different ways to be able to institute that economy of design that will help make games less expensive for them to produce, which will mean greater profits for them. So, no, I don't think we're headed towards a crash. I think there was a lot of concern that would happen, but I don't see it actually getting to that point now.
You hear that, Pat? Capcom was ahead of their time in the 90s.
Yeah. So, okay. I guess we've kind of talked all we can about crappy devs and that kind of negative stuff. So let's talk about something positive. We had a release this week from Supergiant Games.
Yes.
It was, it's called Pyre. You might have heard of it. I've been talking about it a lot over the past few weeks. So it's out, and yeah, we're going to talk about it now. So let's get into it. I'm assuming that pretty much everybody here has played it by now.
A little bit. Not as much as I wanted to get around to, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't play video games. I just complain about them.
I actually, because I knew that we were going to be talking about this game at some point today, I made sure to load it up last night. It's the first time I actually had a chance to sit down and just play a game, not recording something for a while. And so I managed to get a couple hours into it at least. So
I heard it's NBA Jam with slavery. Is that right?
Yes.
that was when I read about it. I was like, this is NBA Jam with slavery. And I don't know how I feel about that.
Somebody compared it to like taking NBA Jam and combining it with Oregon Trail.
Yeah. You know, is there dysentery? That's actually not far off. It's really not. That's a pretty good analogy.
Yeah, it's as far as the narrative goes, yeah, it's not that far off of a comparison. I did like the – I don't know if I liked it, but I did have to note the whole literacy being a crime in the Commonwealth. That's something that just kind of stuck out at me when I saw that.
Well, I mean, that used to sort of be the reality for like hundreds of years.
Yeah, if you weren't aristocrats, yeah, it was kind of a crime that you'd be doing that sort of thing.
Well, first rule of subjugating a society, take away their education.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there are places I could go with that, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, this is Day Zero Update, not Let's Weekend.
Yeah. So I'll put that in there. But yeah, so the narrative is strong, as I would say. It's definitely a little bit different than what Supergiant has done. Usually it's a one-person game that they've typically done with Transistor and Bastion. You're basically only following one character. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you got a whole lot of characters that come in and out. And you meet and you find out their motivations, and it's all done through this, you know, visual novel-esque style interface, which I'm not sure I kind of dig, but, you know, it doesn't deter me too much from wanting to play it.
Well, I haven't played it, but I've always gotten the, for all of their games, I felt like they were worth a lot more than the money that I paid for them.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's a plus. I imagine Pyre is probably the same way.
Yeah. Yeah, we should probably talk about the gameplay a little bit, because if we talked a little bit about it being NBA Jam style, and I think that's a fair
comparison. Is there a big head mode? I feel like that would probably be really bad if the context of the game is the way that I described it.
Greg, make it happen.
Yeah, we'll see about that. It starts off simple enough. I mean, they walk you through a little bit of a tutorial just to get the basics down, and then after a few matches, you start to realize that there is a lot more depth here than you were initially thinking. Characters start developing specific abilities, you start getting new techniques to be able to work with, and it starts turning into what I would classify as a very, very competent action sports game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was actually surprised at how easily I got sucked into the game at all. The gameplay, from what I saw, the actual matches that you face, like, oh, this is going to be ridiculously simple. You know, you dodge around these guys, and I don't feel like dodging them, so I'll just shoot them with my special ability until they're all gone, and then just walk up and dunk. And that actually worked spectacularly well, so I just kept doing it. I'm like, this is getting a lot harder to do now. And, I'm turning into a one-trick pony, and I'm going to start losing if I don't start adapting. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I like how it does have a natural skill progression where it does get you used to playing the game, and it does get you used to being able to work with the different mechanics at your disposal and slowly injecting new ones into it, not just brain dumping them all at once or anything like that.
Yeah.
You can definitely tell they put this together with a lot of thought involved.
Yeah. And, that kind of brings us to the sound and visual design of the game, which...
It's Supergiant. Supergiant,
yeah.
So...
Yeah. They have a very unique style. They're typically 2D. Their art is... Well, in this particular game, is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
No other way to play it. Playing this thing on a PS4 Pro is fantastic.
How's the music? Because the music in their last two games was phenomenal.
Music is really good. I was enjoying the heck out of it. That was one of the first things that caught me. It was like, this song is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Darren Korb? Is that the guy's name?
Darren Korb, and there's a track in there with Ashley Barrett in there as well. The theme song is called In the Flame. If you can, probably YouTube it and find it. It's a really good song. Mm-hmm. Darren Korb, I think, has a very unique ability to make music that is both easy to dismiss in the background and yet will just bore into your subconscious.
Yeah, that dude's punching well, well above his weight class.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Now this one will most likely end up on my list of top 10 games of the year.
Yeah.
It's just, it proves that you don't have to have crazy good graphics. All you have to do is have a good art design and a solid premise for a game and implement it well, and then you have gold.
Well, we're Famicom fans, so we know how that works.
Yeah, he didn't have a whole heck of a lot of graphics back then. He just had to have art direction.
Well, yeah, I think there is something as well to be said for, you know, a lot of really beautiful art, whether it's in video games or music or anything visually, can come about from limitation. Whereas I think that's sort of a problem that you see with the stagnation in a lot of AAA games, is that if you have all of this money, you can pretty much do whatever you want. You can render that rock in 8K if you want, but it's just a rock. and that's not going to make the game any better.
And so how much money are they going to spend rendering it in 8K?
Right, exactly. Whereas, you know, if you just make something, you know, look good and based on like that artistic style rather than, you know, super realistic, I think it makes a difference. I've had that problem playing Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, that game is gorgeous. Like, the vistas and everything are just insane, but like it hits like that uncanny valley where like nobody's mouth moves right. And so it's like, this looks great until things start actually talking. And you don't see that with these stylized games like Pyre or Transistor or anything else like that.
Yeah, it's definitely a less is more system with games like this. And, you know, it shows that if someone has even an ounce of creativity, they can come out with something better and more interesting than most of the AAA games out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, who would have thought that, you know, in 2017 we'd be playing a game where your goal is to run in and immolate yourself. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
that's basically the whole point of it.
And I predicted that, Phil. Come on.
Wow. Not everybody's as prescient as you. Yeah. What do you guys think of the weird language that everybody speaks, except for that one guy?
Oh, the little half second speech over the lines of text. I thought that was a very creative way to have a minimalistic approach to including voiceover while still maintaining that older style text based game feel. I've always liked that. So I've seen it done in a lot of other games, and I've always enjoyed it. And then having a full voiceover narration was a really fantastic add-in. I think that just basically kind of give it a good blend of the best of both worlds type situation.
Yeah. And what I particularly appreciate about that whole language selection is it seems consistent throughout the entire thing that I've played so far. Characters don't change what they say based on the words that are on the screen. By that I mean if it's a particular word, you get a particular sound that goes along with it. So after a while, you can kind of start to pick up what they're actually implying. It's remarkable, really, for me, like somebody who's visually impaired. Having audio cues is kind of important. So I'm kind of nice. I'm kind of glad that they threw something like that in there. You know, language is, it's hard to do in a game.
It is. It really is, especially when you're coming up with your own language, because then it just sounds like, you know, reverse Pig Latin most of the time. But
yeah.
But I didn't in that case. So I guess we pretty much all like Pyre from what we played of it.
Yeah, I really need to play a lot more of it. I planned on doing a stream where I just dove headfirst into it a few nights ago, but a friend of mine got out of the hospital and was doing her first stream since then that night, and so I wanted to be more supportive of that, and so I didn't get to do the stream that night, but it'll be soon.
Yeah,
I'll play it when they put in the big head mode.
Well, I haven't gotten all the way through the game, so, you know.
It might be there.
Might already be there. Because you do unlock some stuff as you go through.
If I can play with Bill Clinton, I'll be straight 95 all over again.
Yeah.
That reminds me, Lee, did you ever get On Fire Edition?
I did, but I haven't had any time to play it because, remember, I don't play games anymore.
Well, let me know when that changes because I'll play some of it with you.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely will. Yeah, I got it. I'm gonna school my son too.
Oh yeah.
He's gonna get some.
Yeah.
That's how we used to do it back in the day, Junior. It's like, shut up, old man.
Like, they even went to the trouble of hiring Mark Turmel to do the project and bringing in Tim Kitzrow to be the commentator. Like, it is NBA Jam.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think I probably would like NBA Jam without the slavery component. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah. Although if Supergiant wants to hire Tim Kitzrow to voice the
I would be completely okay with that.
Yeah, commentary on Pyre's Versus mode, I'd be totally okay with that too. So, yeah. But this was not a review. Chris is going to be working on that review for the next couple of days, I believe. So yeah, we'll look for that on smashpad.com, because I have to point, I have to plug the site every now and then.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, we will move on, I believe. We've got August PlayStation Plus and Games with Gold. So Sid, if you want to take a bathroom break, you can totally do that now. yeah, a lot of. A lot of good games this month.
It's decent these months, isn't it?
Yeah. PlayStation Plus, I think the highlights are definitely Just Cause 3. A lot of people haven't had a chance to play that, so yeah, you'll be able to get that for free.
Yeah, it's definitely a good game to have.
Yeah. Yeah, what else is on the lineup, Chris?
Also for PS4 is Assassin's Creed Freedom Cry, which is the sort of... they took the DLC for Black Flag and made it into a standalone game. Hmm. So it's like a nice mini Assassin's Creed adventure, which might be good leading up to the next game.
I've played it. That's actually pretty solid. I was the history of slavery in the Caribbean is a dark subject, and it's one that not a lot of people talk about. And in that one, you actually take control of. I can't remember the guy's name from Assassin's Creed 4 because it's been so long since I played it, but you take control of his first mate, Ade, and it deals with the slavery in the Caribbean and a lot. It's actually remarkably mature. I wasn't expecting the way that it was handled when I played it. I got to give props to Ubisoft for that one. It's definitely worth playing. It can be a little unsettling, though.
Yeah. Also on PS4, it's cross-buy with the Vita version as well as Downwell.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very good sort of a kind of roguelike-ish spelunky type game, but a lot more action to it as you're trying to go down the well.
Mm.
I've heard a lot of good things. I've enjoyed what I've played, but I stink at that game. I think also for PS4 is cross-buy with the PS3 version is Super Motherload, which was good a launch game. Title and one I enjoyed a lot. It has crazy co-op in it where there's a lot of friendly fire, so you can just go nuts and kill each other. Also coming out...
Insanity, also a theme of that game.
Yeah. Snakeball for the PS3, which I believe does not have trophies, because that was a very early PSN game. I haven't played it, so I don't know too much about it. But also for Vita is Level 22. An indie game. I don't really know too much about that one either. So that's a pretty good month for PlayStation Plus. I think also for that month they got movie rentals for the next few weeks. 99-cent movie rentals. Like Batman, the Lego Batman movies this week, which is a good movie to rent, especially for that cheap.
Yeah. Don't forget That's You. That's also it's also included.
Yeah, that's until October. So. Mm. You got plenty of time.
Yeah.
Let's see. Also, they got a free starter pack for Dreadnought, a multiplayer kind of space combat shooter, but it's not like as freeform and 3D as you might think. It's more just typical sort of a 2D moving around kind of shooter.
Yeah, it's space naval combat, it looks like.
Yeah. I played a bit of the beta. It's okay. But it might just be I'm not really into that stuff. And I guess the other thing they mentioned here is just that Doom is on sale for half off for about till towards the end of the next week, which I picked up and finally got it downloaded.
After 70 gigs of download.
Yeah. That is a game. Don't be starting it unless you're going to finish it.
Yep.
Yeah, for Xbox Live Games with Gold... the first game is Slime Rancher. It's going to be starting up on August 1st. It's finally coming out of Early Access. So that game is one that I played the preview trial, and it's a game I like a lot. It kind of has a bit of clicker to it, where you're just collecting more of these slimes, you're farming them, and you build like automatic feeders that you put food into them. And they poop out gems that you use to spend on more stuff. Hmm. So you get more slime, and they give you more money that you can use to buy more stuff to get more slimes. And it just keeps going higher.
Endless circle.
Yeah.
That sounds like my day job.
Yeah. Except there's lots of cute slimes in there. That is going to be an interesting game to see. Coming out on the 16th is Trials Fusion, which is a very good game.
Yeah, got that on PS4. It's a lot of fun.
It's a good game to piss yourself off all the time.
Yeah, that game doesn't mess around with its mechanics. It's you really have to be on point with your control movements to get that bike to do what you want it to. And if it starts off easy enough, but it quickly elevates to ridiculous levels of complexity.
Yeah, especially when you start throwing in tricks on that stuff.
My son would troll me with that game. He'd create tracks. I'm like, Dad, do this. Like, I guess he wanted to see if I put the controller through the TV.
Did you?
No, my TV's way too expensive. I put him through the TV rather than the controller.
That doesn't solve the expensive issue, but okay.
I might be able to claim it on insurance, though.
True.
What happened? My 12-year-old went through the TV. I'm not going to tell you why. But I got the deductible money.
Yeah.
And on Xbox 360, the first game up on August 1st is Bayonetta. Should be a pretty good version.
That's a hell of a start.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And ending up the month, August 16th, is Red Faction Armageddon, which not a good way to end the month.
No. Nope.
It takes some of the cool stuff that Guerrilla did and says, hey, what if we put these in corridors, small corridors, on objects that if you break them, it might make it hard to do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of undermines its own
premise.
Cool mechanics to just have some sort of weird sequel to Guerrilla.
Yeah,
that game was just put there so you could go back and play Bayonetta.
You should definitely play Bayonetta. That's probably one of the most underrated action games available on the 360, I believe.
Yeah,
I would agree. You know what's weird about Bayonetta? Like, I saw that and I wasn't... Her costume and stuff didn't bother me, but, like, you know, I got a wife and I was like, man, it's going to be weird playing this and having her walk in. Like, why does the hair keep moving around? Like, what is all this? My wife's a bigger fan of that game than I am. Like, we got a Wii U, and when she found out Bayonetta 2 was out, like, she got it, like, release day and, like, stayed up the whole night to beat it. Like, I didn't see her till like, 5 in the morning. Like, what are you doing? I just finished Bayonetta. Like, what? It totally threw me off. And so, now she's got the Amiibos on her desk. And I just – it's one of those weird things where I'm like, I figured this would be the one thing that, like, my wife would be like, damn, this is sexist as hell. And she's like, nope. Hair whirling around and guns as high heels. I'm with it.
Yes.
Bizarre, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And I should probably also point out that game's available on PC. Like, they kind of dropped a very excellent PC port of that just out of nowhere a few months back. So, yeah, check that one out.
Yeah, and there's rumors that they're going to be porting the Wii U Bayonetta 2 and 1 over to Switch. So I'm hoping that is true. That'd be a nice
and
place
the evacuation
to try it out.
Plan continues.
Yep.
Yeah, I suspect we're going to be seeing a lot more of the Wii U evacuation plan in the next few months. Star Fox Zero is a deserving game.
Yes.
Should go there. So we'll have to wait.
See, I wouldn't. Here's the thing, that whole controller mechanic they had with the Wii U version, I actually wouldn't so much mind that on the Switch version.
Switch doesn't work that way, though.
Yeah,
shit, I would. I don't want to play Twister while I'm playing a video game.
Preach it.
Yeah.
My point was is that the Switch controller is not nearly as heavy or cumbersome as the Wii U one was.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, it's also,
The Switch doesn't have the ability to do two screens at once, so that'd be a problem.
Yeah, I just think they should port everything from the Wii U onto the Switch and just make everyone happy. I'll take portable versions of all of that stuff.
Yeah, Super Mario 3D World, New Super Mario Brothers U.
Yeah. Well, they're at about 25% of the Wii U library at this point.
Yeah.
Have I told you guys how much Nintendo sucks this week?
Yeah.
Because if I haven't, there was that Amazon truck thing. And man, Nintendo sucks.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, you've actually visited the treasure truck.
The treasure truck is bizarre. Like, when I went out to it, like, I was really taken aback because, like, there's a bubble machine and there's, like, people standing around. There are, like, these Mario standees. And, like, people could play, like you would throw, like, a ring in a hole and win something. But, like, there was a guy, there was this Asian dude out there who got 12 of the NES classics. And this dick had the nerve to, like, sit, like, he got, like, in the jail pose, like, where he was on his knees and took a picture of, like, all 12 of the bags. And what was weird is, like, you could hear the disgust from everyone. Like, because people were walking, like, there was one guy that got two of them, like, and it was, like, him and his, because what you had to do is, like, you would buy the thing online through the Amazon app, and then you would get a code, and you just walk up to the truck, and you would give the code to them, and they'd be like, cool. Well, at one point, like, some Amazon people walked off, and, like, of course, you know, this is the A, so somebody walked up and took a few of them, because there's, like, there's no line, and there's no indication when you visit the truck that you'd actually have to buy this online. It just has the price on a board next to a bubble machine. So you're sitting there trying to figure out how to buy this thing, getting bubbles flown in your face, and Super Mario standing next to you. It's very surreal. But, like, you know, this week, you know, ThinkGeek got, you know, managed, I guess, find a box of these things that fell off a truck, and of course Amazon did as well. And, you know, like, that Asian guy was obviously paying his mortgage with those NES classics. But and then, you know, we've had the whole debacle with the SNES classic, and I just kind of wanted to reiterate, in case anybody didn't know, how much I think Nintendo sucks. They really fucking suck.
Well,
just so we're on the same page.
Yeah. So thanks for that.
Yeah.
Treasure truck. It's creepy.
It's a weird truck, man. I'll send a picture for you. I'll send a picture over in the chat, because it's like old timey, like carnival stuff, like with the lights and shit. And it is bizarre. And I never even heard of it until today, or until this weekend. And I guess, like, Amazon has had a truck like this rolling around Seattle, like handing out donuts and, like, camping gear, which is just bizarre. But, you know, I mean, it was interesting. Like, the place that they put it had no parking for us, so people were getting, like, double parked, and, like, they had a tow truck waiting outside. So it was bizarre. Only in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But Nintendo sucks. So does Atlanta traffic, but probably not as much as Nintendo.
Okay. Yeah, no real way to go to the next story after that. So we'll just say, Ilphonic. Sid, you actually talked about this briefly earlier this week, I think, or was it last week? I lost track. The Friday the 13th was apparently not abandoning Friday the 13th.
That's good, because it's not finished yet.
Yeah.
I haven't bought the game. I don't play it, but I have a lot of friends who stream it, and so many times every night that they do this, they get kicked back to the Xbox dashboard just randomly.
Yeah, well, the console versions are even worse than PC right now.
Yeah,
part of the problem is it doesn't have dedicated servers, so if the person that's technically hosting it quits, everybody's kicked out.
The only thing I heard about that game is the Laser Time people did a stream and a bunch of 12-year-olds showed up, which was apparently hysterical, because I don't think they're supposed to be playing that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, the entire game is just, it should not have been released. Even in the state that it's in now, it should not have been released, let alone
the state
it was
in. It shouldn't have made it into beta in this state.
No. It is still very much an alpha of the game.
What's wrong with it?
Everything.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like, literally everything, like, I'm not exaggerating when I say that a few times per night I will see my friends playing this game and just getting randomly kicked back, not to the title screen, but to the Xbox dashboard. So,
that's
awful. Ilphonic, fix your shit.
Yeah, see, the problem is a lot of people don't have much faith in Ilphonic right now as it is, because it was announced way back when that Friday the 13th was not the only game that Ilphonic was working on. They were working on another game that I guess it's in beta right now.
No, it's not. Yeah. They think it is, but it's not. They're calling it beta.
Yeah.
Is that beta in air quotes?
Yeah, beta in air quotes. And on top of that, you know, they've been working on this game, and a lot of people are concerned about the split focus because they are a small team. And, you know, to be honest, you know, Illphonic doesn't exactly have the most sterling of reputations to begin with. This was the same development team that were working on the Star Marine component of Star Citizen that they ended up having to completely scrap. And they kicked Illphonic to the curb and had to rebuild the Star Marine component themselves from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well,
now with Friday the 13th, it's a real shame too, because the core concept that they've put together is fantastic, but
it's dead by daylight with Jason Skin.
Yeah, it kind of is.
To be honest, you know, I know that's a bit disparaging, but it feels like dead by daylight to me.
Yeah,
it seemed like they wanted to get that game out before Dead by Daylight came to consoles.
Yeah.
Oh, they've been rushing as hard as they can to get this game into people's hands as quickly as possible, to the detriment of the game.
Yeah. And,
you know, I've spoken with Ben Praetorian from Gun Media multiple times. Seems like a nice enough guy, but this game just feels like it's been mismanaged and mishandled. And I think, you know, a lot of people will still say, even though Illphonic isn't abandoning Friday the 13th, quite the opposite, according to their statement, they're hiring additional people. So they should have probably done that as soon as they found out how many copies they were selling.
Yeah. Because they have the money at that point.
Yeah.
And every one of those sales is somebody that they're really screwing out of a better experience with every day that goes by.
Yeah. And if you should happen to get banned from the multiplayer, well, you're SOL, yep. Basically.
You paid $40 for a game you can no longer play.
Yeah. And getting banned seems completely arbitrary at this point.
Well, apparently you can still play private matches with your friends, but that's it.
Yeah. Which I would say is the only thing worth playing in that game.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, this is one of those few games where you can actually get banned for running across a known glitch.
Wow. Yeah. I don't know how they, you know, track all that stuff, and they're not telling you. So
nope. That's
a problem.
How do you even do something the effort like that tracking with a straight face?
Could have gone into fixing the glitch.
Yeah, could have.
Yeah, they could fix some of the glitches. They could, you know, spin up, you know, separate servers for the quote bad eggs and silo them from the rest of the public, at least on temporary bans or anything like that. But no, they just ban them.
Yeah, it's like,
and they pointed out we've only issued like I think it was like 54 bans or something like that. I was like, that's still way too many.
Yeah,
I mean, my God, what did all of these people do? Did they leave a burning paper bag of something on your doorstep? What did, you know? But that, I guess even that, I guess, requires video evidence. So if you want to catch someone cheating or something like that, you have to record all of your gameplay.
Yeah.
So, Sid, let me ask you a question, because, you know, obviously you've been spotlighting a lot of this stuff on your YouTube channel, just, you know, developers being shitty in general. Besides, obviously, the monetary angle that we talked about, what do you think that can be done about, you know, these kinds of practices? Because it seems like it's only going to get worse. We've definitely seen this, you know, I think coming. I don't think it's a surprise to anybody. So I'm curious what your take on that stuff is. If we can't take away the monetary reward, which is, you know, a big reason anybody's doing any of this stuff, what do you think can be done?
Well, you know, that what can be done is basically you have to let these companies know that their bottom line can be hurt.
Yes.
That their pocketbooks can be hurt by these decisions that they're making. And we've seen that. That's why, you know, you haven't seen me speak out too much about people changing their reviews on Steam to negative. Because it will give people pause. It will, even if it doesn't necessarily feel right, You know, it's not like doxing someone or something like that that you'll never find me agreeing with. But, you know, it will warn people. It will give people pause about maybe buying this game if the developers are up to no good, if they're not doing something that is beneficial to their community, if they're not handling things appropriately, then people should get warned away from them. And that's the only way to correct this bad behavior is to make sure that they know that if they continue down this track, they will lose sales and they will lose customers and they'll lose face value. And people will remember that for the next time.
Yeah, it reminds me of the whole SimCity incident. Like, I'll never forget the way that some outlets fawned over the last SimCity, and then, you know, it was basically released completely broken, and now they don't even exist anymore. But, of course, EA is a big enough company that they can absorb that kind of thing. Like, we put this out, we got our money, and we're not going to do it. So hopefully with these smaller developers, they don't have that kind of recourse. So, you know, hopefully those will be the kind of thing. But I do wonder, too, sometimes if, like, you know, you're talking about, like, the Friday the 13th issue, even with all the money that they could throw at that stuff, maybe it's sometimes these people just aren't capable.
They're not.
Not as an excuse, but, like, I mean, I work for a software developer, and, I mean, I do see times where people just get in over their head not even knowing what it is that they've sort of promised, and particularly with anything that you have that you put out as early access, that seems to be like a horrible pit that you could fall in and just not deliver anything that you promised on. But then you still get your money anyway.
Yeah, it really can be. Actually, Ark would be a fantastic example of that, to where they actually released paid DLC for their game while the game was still in early access.
Okay. Wait, what?
Yeah,
they put out expansions.
I spoke about that in a recent video, and I had all kinds of people saying, well, they needed to do that for the lawsuit that they had leveraged against them. They had to, otherwise they couldn't keep working on the they stole a bunch of developers from – they left this development company and took a bunch of people with them to form their own development company, which was a breach of a non-compete.
Non-compete. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Okay. I didn't know that.
And they got sued over it, and a lot of people were saying, well, they needed that DLC package to be able to pay for the damages on that settlement.
Dude, I wish I could live my life like that. Like, I fucked up.
And it's
up.
Like – you know, first off,
oh my God.
First off, the developers themselves said that's not the case. And secondly, I don't care. I really don't.
That's right.
They shouldn't have done it to begin with then. You know, I know they wanted to go off and make their own game, but there are ways to extricate yourself from a non-compete agreement after you leave a company. It will take some time. You might have to delay for a while. But better that than suffer millions in damages that you now have to pay out, that you are paying out of the money that you earned through an early access game where that money was supposed to be used for development of the game.
And people, do we know how much this thing sold?
Ark? A lot.
And no, the DLC in particular.
Oh, a lot. A lot. It was on the top 10.
Over 5 million.
It was on the top 10 sellers list on Steam for over a week.
Yeah. Ark is a solid game. Despite the fact that the developers might be a little bit
shady.
Iffy, at least the product is good. Question mark?
Well, I think that also brings up an interesting topic is that, like, you know, if you're one of these people that are disappointed by, like, moves like this, it sort of feels like anything that you would do in protest to let a company know that you're not okay with these kinds of business practices are drowned out. I mean, it sounds like there are apologists for Ark for this DLC that were on board with, like, yeah, we'll pay for this lawsuit. Yeah.
Well, there always will be. There always will be with every game out there. We've seen it with Ark. We're seeing it now with PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, and we're seeing it with Friday the 13th, the game, too. These games will always generate that tribalistic group of people that they go well past fan to the point of fanatic, to where those are the ones that do have the unhealthy attachment to the game and to those that made the game and will defend it at all costs. Regardless
like
of
anything
the truth you put it in front of them. And, you know, Illphonic have shown that they just don't do a good job.
Yeah.
I mean, they've shown that time and time again. And to continue to allow them to get away with this stuff is it would be, you know, it would be irresponsible of content creators like myself and others to not say something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so it sounds like, too, part of the onus for this really perhaps should fall back on Valve. Like with anything early release or something like that, they should be able to have rules like that. Like you can't create DLC for a game that is in early access.
Well, like they could, but at the same time, you know, a lot of people will equate it to, you know, you go into Walmart, do you expect them to come down on a company that produced a suit that didn't include a tie with it?
I don't know. I don't know that that's exactly the same
thing.
It's
very much a false equivalency, but you will see that type of argument thrown around a lot.
Well, I imagine Valve doesn't want to be the arbiter for that kind of thing because all they're really doing at that point is taking away from their bottom line because they're making money if that DLC sells as well on Steam.
All Valve wants to be is a shelf on which everything is put. Mm-hmm. That's all they want to be. And
I don't want to make games anymore.
I could go off on this for a very long time, but you know, a lot of people give Valve a lot of credit for things that they really shouldn't even have credit for. I mean, take for example their whole refund system. The only reason why they have that refund system in place is because they were pressured to legally. Before that, they actually had people in the UK signing, required to agree to license agreements that waived their right to a refund.
Yeah. Well, and I think that was also, like, to your point, I think that was also spurred on by the fact that, you know, a chunk of their retail space, that shelf that you're talking about, was full of broken shit, and particularly in America, there's no way to get a refund for that broken shit. It's not like going to Walmart where if something doesn't work, you can take it back. And so I always figured that they did that partially due to pressure because eventually they would get sued and someone would be able to take their asses.
Oh, they
to
had
court
to
and,
because they were being sued.
Yeah.
Oh, they not were. That
they were, yes.
Yeah.
I was not aware of that.
Yep. Australia.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I knew they had lawsuits in other countries. I meant particularly within America. I always felt that was what happened was a result of them getting sued in Australia, but also because eventually someone would be able to bring a class action suit against them for basically selling broken products with no recourse.
No, the only reason why America has a refund system on Steam as well as some other platforms that offer refund is because it was easier for them to leave the box unchecked.
Yeah.
Basically, it would be easier for them to implement a blanket refund system across the board for all countries than it would be to region lock them.
Yeah.
And plus, you know, the PR fallout for having, you know, well, this country gets refunds and this country doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, Valve ends up looking like the good guy.
Yeah, which they did. I think I even remember putting out a video at the time saying, wow, Valve did something fantastic for the consumers. Little did I know at the time that, oh, it's because they were required to by law.
Yeah, I think very few companies do the right thing because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah,
they won't. But, you know, that's not to say anything necessarily bad. They're not, you know, there's no reason to demonize these companies over things like that. I mean, you just have to make sure to take every dealing with them from a basis that they're a company, that they're looking to make money.
Yeah,
they're
this is a financial transaction. Your money. Exactly.
And they're looking to do as little effort as possible in getting that transaction to take place.
It's a lot like a stripper, actually. Yeah. I'm not kidding. I used to be a bouncer, and all guys getting lap dances are ATM transactions. And so, but you know, you have – I can't even believe I'm going into this, but you have guys in there that are like, oh, she cares about me. And she, I know you can't, Pat. oh, she cares about me. And this is, you know, obviously she's taking my money, but, you know, we're friends and da 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 da. And I actually kind of see that same sort of pathology with gamers. It's always kind of struck me as funny. But it is at the end of the day, a financial transaction. And they're going to do is just to your point, as little as they can to get as much as they can.
Yeah, and that very much is the same with these developers like Illphonic and Gun Media and all those. They are all this is a means for them to get money from you.
Yeah.
And you know, they will have people in that company that do care about what they're doing, that will try and do a good job, but not all of them. And at the end of the day, it's still a business. And the business is to sell a product for a fee. And there is absolutely no reason whatsoever to have any form of loyalty to any of these companies at all. Because at the end of the day, they don't care about you. They really don't. What they care about is getting your money from you.
Yeah.
So why do you think people conflate that? Why do you think that there is that that care? Because there's a commonality with people liking games?
Mostly, I think it springs from wishful thinking. You know, it's fan can turn into fandom. Fan can turn into fanatic very easily. Mm-hmm. People have an amazing ability to obfuscate things within their own minds. They really can. It's phenomenal to see. So they're able to equate the product that they love with the company producing it, and that will translate eventually to loving the company for the products they produce. So
also
it's that,
a deep-seated
that
need
gentle
to ascribe
flip.
Meaning to everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's the same reason why people it is a different aspect of anthropomorphication, to where you can ascribe human emotions and feelings to inanimate objects or, you know, lower life forms like amoeba or something like that.
Yeah.
Or shrimp. You know, you put googly eyes on something and suddenly it has a personality.
That is true. I have googly eyes on my refrigerator right now and I feel like it's watching me. It makes me uncomfortable, but it's also hysterical at the same time.
See, and it's that desire, that deep-seated desire for people to form connections and to be able to empathize and sympathize that causes that to happen. And it's not always healthy. It's not always a bad thing. I mean, we've seen companies earn brand loyalty that have saw them through, oh, we made a mistake, but we're trying to correct it and we're doing everything we can to do right by you guys. Mm-hmm. Because they will try. There are those companies out there that they're not all bad and they're not these evil, you know, money consuming machines. There's still people behind them. There's still people driving them. Just not all those people are good people, but some of them are. And so that aspect will allow those companies to be seen through those hard times where we did make a mistake, but we're trying to fix it.
Yeah.
The problem is it also allows those companies to get away with a lot of things that they shouldn't necessarily be able to get away with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And consumers have, you know, very few tools to, you know, make their displeasure known, really. As far as Steam goes, well, there's the discussion forums, but that doesn't really count for a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah, the discussion forum threads can just be deleted.
Yeah, that's like one of the only tools we have are reviews, and that's what people are going to have to use. So
So to circle back, no, Ilphonic is not abandoning Friday the 13th, but I do feel like this split focus, especially from what I've heard of this other game, this split focus of theirs, because they are a small team, yeah. I feel like they diluted themselves to the point where it was to the detriment of both games.
Mm. Yeah. So, well, I do wish them the best, because, you know, we do want that game to actually be good.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind playing it once the single player comes out, because that's the only thing I'd really be interested in. I don't really do multiplayer shooters, so man. Yeah. Anyways,
That's the other thing that will get people, that will allow them to suck in and continue buying games from crap developers. Is, well, I wish them well. I want them to succeed. I feel for them. I feel for their difficulties. But at the end of the day, I'm trying to be a nice person, so I'll give them more chances than they deserve.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's really – well, I have to couch this because we know there are a lot of shady developers on Steam. But for the most part, I don't think that developers are trying to make deliberately crappy games. You know, I think they're trying to do the best that they can, and sometimes you have to support them. Sometimes you just have to walk.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't like the – I always feel like there's nuance and context to a lot of this stuff. I have a real issue with the knee-jerk reaction from the internet in general of, you know, oh, this one thing didn't work the way that I thought it would, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, it's obviously shit. These people are greedy. They're horrible. And they kicked my dog. You know, like I'm not one of those people that believes, and that's part of the reason I even brought up the idea of escalation at the beginning of our conversation, because it's I would hope, I guess, that people are not as shady as they might seem to be. But it, man, it's so hard being on the internet and trying to come to that realization. Hell, I mean, Sid, I'm sure you run into that in the YouTube comment sections. Like, I can't even read comment sections. Like, that just makes me go, like, you know,
I was planning on doing a video about that, actually, because it's an interesting thing. Because, you know, I'm a fairly thick-skinned person. I can take a lot of punishment. You know, I'm not completely immune to such things, but it takes a lot to affect me. And I always sat there and watched people, like, especially with Angry Joe recently and Total Biscuit in the past, watched them, you know, TB disabled the comments on all of his videos. And he walked away from his social media and had Christian take it over for him. And Joe wanted to shut down the comments on his videos. And I always sat there, you know, before I started up my own channel, I always sat there and was like, my God, how could they just – how weak-willed are these people that they can't deal with this? You know?
Right.
Because it's also very much something that I've learned very readily that you don't know.
Yeah, you don't
know.
You
don't know. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I've even gotten to the point where I thought about turning off the comments on my videos. I immediately about faced the next morning and said, nope, not going to do it. But I thought about it. And,
I assume that's because of the toxicity, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what kind of stuff got lobbed at you?
Oh, it wasn't lobbed at me. It was the infighting that I was seeing going on because over the whole Alex Maurer situation, there were a lot of people that were saying a lot of transphobic things in the comments, and they were expressing their own beliefs and feelings and everything like that.
Oh, boy.
They refused to call Alex she, and you know, they refer to Alex as he, and then all these other people, you know, some transgender people, some people that just hate the idea of someone being intolerant in any way, and it devolved into a tiny little war going on in the comments section of my videos. And I even had people trying to dictate to me what to do with my comments on Twitter, and you saying, you need to disable the comments, you need to delete all these comments, you need to do this, you need to do that. I'm like, I got to the point where I was like, you know what, I just want to say screw it and not deal with it and just shut it all down for a week.
Sits over there like, I'm not doing shit. Just kiss my ass.
But then I decided, you know what? My entire channel is based on consumer advocacy and consumer awareness. And one of the largest precepts of that is people being allowed to speak their minds, even if you don't agree with what they say. Because it's easy to say that, you know, I believe in freedom of speech. It's a lot harder to practice it when you're faced with someone that you completely disagree with.
Absolutely.
And so that's why I decided I'm not going to do it. You know, I will, of course, anyone issuing death threats, I've automatically friggin' banned, no question in my mind, because that's not freedom of speech at that point.
No, that's
I had that argument criminal. With a lot of people over Bill Maher having that Milo douchebag on his show. Like, just for full disclosure, my best friend is trans. I have no issue with trans people or anything else like that. I have no problem with gay people, blah, 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 blah. I feel like life is too short. You know, however you want to identify yourself, whoever you want to love, man, that's your business, because life is way too hard anyway. But I remember distinctly, you know, having conversations where people were like saying that Bill Maher should have his show canceled, that, you know, he should be shamed and all this stuff because he gave Milo Yiannopoulos or whatever a platform. And my argument to that was, you either believe in free speech or you don't. And putting that in practice is, yes, this person is saying horrible things. Yes, this person probably is actually horrible. But you either believe in free speech or you don't. And once we get to a point where we're like, I'm just going to shut anyone up that is saying something that I don't agree with, you stop having a conversation. And then at that point, you know, there is no freedom involved with that, you know, whatsoever. Props to you for that. Cause I can only imagine, like, if I was remotely famous, for anything that I did. I can't imagine I'd even be on Twitter because, I mean, my God. Just some of the things that people say is just
it's absolutely horrendous. But at the same time, how do you combat an idea if you don't allow the opposition a platform to speak on?
Right.
Because that's the thing that a lot of people make a mistake with is you attack the idea, you don't attack the person. You know, I actually watch Milo Yiannopoulos' stuff. I actually watch Milo Yiannopoulos' stuff. I think he's fucking hilarious. I honestly do. I don't agree with better than 90% of what he says, but I still think he's entertaining and amusing as hell. And I love how much he gets under the skin of those who oppose him. But at the same time, you can't put yourself into an echo chamber and expect to be able to grow.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And you know, I've stated numerous, and this was one of those things where I was put to the test again. You know, I've stated multiple times over the past 2 years that I would rather burn my channel to the ground than violate the tenets that it was founded on. And I would have done that if I had disabled the comments on my videos. Well, and said. I still almost did it. I decided it's like I'm going to sleep on this. I'm going to think about it tomorrow morning with a clear head, and then I'll make a decision. And then I realized what it was that I was considering. I was like, I can't do this. I can't.
So you don't moderate either?
To the point of if anyone's like, I've gone through and I've found people's like, can someone just hire a hitman to kill this person already? Well, you're getting reported and blocked. But you know, it's like I refuse to call this person a he. Like, okay, that's your opinion. That's your opinion. You know, I'm not going to silence you from saying that. But at the same time, if someone wants to call you out on it, if someone wants to debate you or argue with you on it, I'm not going to silence them either. Because it's their right to be able to do that. You know, you want to say something, you want to put yourself out there publicly, and someone wants to come back at you, it's all the same thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, it's not up to me to be the thought police. It's not up to me to tell you what you can and cannot say. It's just up to me to put out a video that can, you know, may not be the funniest person out there in the world, but I can at least, you know, put out a video that is at least engaging and that will hopefully make someone think.
Yeah.
That's what I'm there for.
So is there anything that would make you change that stance? Like if you started getting death threats or you're getting doxxed or something like that, is there something that would cause you to take a step back from that?
Oh, I've had all of the above happen, so no.
Yep.
Alex Maurer isn't the first person who's issued a death threat against me, nor is I've had people tell me to kill myself multiple times in the comments section of my videos and who have emailed me the same, and I've had people dox me to the point where they sent me text messages saying, I found you.
Wow.
Mm. It was like, that's fine. Good on you. If you want to find me, come over here. I'm sitting here looking at a veritable host of long-range weaponry at my disposal right now. So if you really want to try and be that foolish, you're more than welcome to.
Yeah.
Oh, I've had that. I've had that crap happen to me too.
Get in line.
Yeah.
You know, keep in mind, I have sort of this sort of mini hobby where I troll neo Nazis on Facebook. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, so it's I don't scare easily, and you know, if you try and threaten me, if you try and issue threats to silence me, it's just going to make me all the louder. Uh-huh. And judging from what's happened with my channel over the past 6 months, I think it's proven that when you try and silence someone, all you're doing is giving them a larger platform.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. All right. So I think what we'll do is we'll call this next story the last one because we're all already up at about an hour and 45.
Is it about how much Nintendo sucks?
No, it's okay. About PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and adding loot crates.
Sorry, I talk a lot.
that's what we love about the show. We're supposed to talk.
Yeah.
It'd be really awful if it was like, so what do you think? Oh, it's good. All right, fantastic. Next
that
topic.
That is a thing that happened.
Yeah. Yes, I am guilty of this. So, Now we've got Player Unknown has recently announced that they're going to be doing cosmetic crates, which is
hats, baby. Give me them hats.
Dear God,
this is another one of those hot buttons that we keep running into. you want to summarize this, Sid? Because there's kind of a little bit more going on than.
Well, it's actually there's less and more. And the initial first announcement is actually very simple and actually relatively benign when it's all said and done. Is we've known that Battlegrounds is going what their business model is going to be once they leave early access, and it is going to include those loot crate and key type systems like you see with CS:GO. And they stated that will not happen until after early access is concluded. Partly because they've already gotten hundreds of millions of dollars off of sales of the game to begin with. But laying that aside, they did announce with their most recent patch that they are instituting three loot crates. Two of them are free to open. One of them can only be opened with a $2.50 key that this is going to be for their Gamescom event. And the money raised from the key sales for that is going to go towards prize pool for a competition, and anything extra will be donated to charity.
Okay, that's cool.
So not all that bad, but you know, a lot of people are raising the questions like, you just got hundreds of millions of dollars. Why do you need to raise money for a prize pool? And a lot of other people are considering this a broken promise because they said that there would be no paid loot crates or keys or anything like that until after the game leaves early access. And then, of course, you have the people that are vociferously defending them and other people that are just completely ambivalent to the whole situation. So it's very interesting. I actually did a video on it where I used that basically as a launch pad to discuss their overarching business model as a whole. But a lot of people apparently didn't pay too close attention to that, and they thought that I was just talking about that one key or that one the one. And once the once Gamescom is concluded, that this paid key crate system will go away until after the game leaves early access.
So basically, this is just a conveniently timed test.
Yes.
Okay. And it's amazing what people will get upset about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you know, I can't stand it. I hate it. I really do. You know, it's perfectly fine. I can see, you know, it's good to say, you know, we're going to throw all the extra to charity. That's a good way. That's an easy way to get extra PR. Yeah. Very simple, easy way to get extra PR because it really costs you nothing at that point. You're getting income for something so you don't have to spend money, and you get positive PR spin on top of it. But at the same time, you know, why do you even need it?
Yeah, it's not like they're hurting for money right now.
No, they've sold over 4 million copies at $30 a pop.
Yeah. And they also got that.
Nice, I think they're doing fine.
They also got that nice deal with Microsoft.
Yeah, they got that nice deal with Microsoft, which was about 12 dump trucks worth of money there.
Yeah. So, I think they're doing fine. Yeah.
And all of this for a multiplayer only game that really doesn't offer very much content at all. Yeah. It's surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently the content updates will be coming in patches, but for now it's a little bare, isn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't even. I actually bought the game to try and get some gameplay footage for my video. I couldn't even get into it. Yeah.
Oof.
Could not connect to Steam server.
Wow.
And I tried for over an hour.
So why did that game sell so much? To try and figure out. It doesn't look. I haven't played it, but it doesn't look like it does anything new and or remotely interesting.
Twitch flavor of the week game.
Yeah.
It's fantastic for Twitch streams, because especially for Twitch streamers that are able to play the game at a high level of expertise, it can be a lot of fun. It very much feels like like a gladiatorial Hunger Games type thing.
Yeah. So.
It does watch pretty well, I must admit.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. I've not played it myself, so I can't really comment to how well a game plays. It's not one of those things that my visual impairment will allow me to play. So, yeah, that's I got that.
Well, Phil, it doesn't look that good anyway, buddy.
Yeah.
You're not missing out on much, trust me.
I don't think that's your disability. I think that's just how the game looks.
Yeah, Phil, it looks like shit. So.
Okay. Yeah.
Not missing anything, pal.
Yeah. So I think with that, we'll call it a show. The rest of the stories, I think, we'll save for next week. I think this is the first time we've ever had to do that. That's fantastic.
A long time, anyway.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, it's fine. This was a great show.
It's been fantastic.
I think the last thing, too, is just, you know, Nintendo sucks.
Yeah.
They do. They really do.
The game industry would be better if players had the balls to not buy games that they still want to buy in order to send a message.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Nintendo sucks. And, you know, it's really this golden ticket shit you have to do to get their stuff now is comical.
Yeah, I've refused to cover Nintendo content on my channel for a long while now, ever since actually when they first announced the Switch. And then I did a news roundup video way back when. Good God, those things were cringy as hell. But... I showed a little bit of footage of Nintendo's advertisement where I was showcasing the Switch, and I thought it was a fantastic idea. And they content ID claimed my video, and I fought it and lost somehow.
Yeah, because
and
Nintendo,
so I just say, you know what? Screw Nintendo. I'm just not going to cover their content on my channel anymore.
Yeah, we dealt with that at Final Round with the whole can you stream Smash? And Nintendo was very against that. And then, of course, it reared its head up at Evo, and then they finally worked it out. But
I thought it was hilarious when the Switch came out, and YouTubers everywhere were just pushing out videos left and right, basically saying this was, you know, the second coming and the greatest thing ever. And then Nintendo claimed all those videos.
Yeah.
What did you think was going to happen? Yeah, you get the distinct impression that someone is driving the vehicle, but maybe they don't have a license. You know? So
I actually made some... watching that. Just like people started producing all these videos, and the week later, Nintendo Content ID claimed my video. I was like, you knew it was going to happen. You knew it was.
Yeah, they haven't changed their stance on that, and it's not like...
Well, don't forget, Nintendo. You guys, Nintendo doesn't know what the internet is. So, like, they don't know what they certainly don't know what an online infrastructure looks like or an account system. So, we can't really hold it against them. They're probably those same people back in, like, 2004 that thought YouTube was actually going to fail. Because who would watch videos on the internet, guys?
Right. I know. It's insane.
Only everybody.
Listen, it's time to wrap up the show. If you're listening for the first time, welcome to the program. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, TuneIn, Google Play, and various other RSS readers. You can also check out our content at smashpad.com. We're expecting a Pyre review up soon, as well as a few other things going up as well in the next few days. With that, I'm Filippo Gianolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And we'll see you next week.